What I know is the following. All the attention, all of it, is going here. What that means is distribution has been commoditized. No longer do you have to pay for distribution if you can produce the content that is effective. It's smart to pay for distribution on these platforms, but you don't have to. It can happen organic. You can get there, and you could spend some of your money building it. What also happens is your end consumer starts latching onto you at a higher level than just the transaction that you're trying to do with them. And for anybody in this room, and I did my homework before I came to this talk, anybody in this room who isn't trying to triple down, 10x down, on being in the service business above and beyond after the first transaction is just not running as smart a business as they can. That is where all the economics are in what you do for a living. And if you can actually use the pool or spa as the gateway drug to services around the entire house, let alone those two units, that's when you start getting into the economics that change you from being a seven-figure business into an eight-figure business. And very honestly, by the way, I just want everybody to understand one thing that's very important to me. Everything that I talk about is hard. Everything that I talk about takes a crap load of work. Everything I talk about takes away from you watching entire seasons of House of Cards. So if you sit in this room and you've put in your 30 years and you're happy with how much money's in the bank and you're feeling good and you're a little tired, you don't have to listen to me. But if you want more, this is offense. If you want more, this is offense. And I promise you, here's the part that really makes me ponder. Right now, it's offense. In 2022, it's going to be defense. How many people here are retiring in the next 5 years? And I don't mean you're gonna crush it and retire and buy a boat. I mean, you're old and you're finished. Raise your hands high. Respect, all right? So for the four of you old dudes, respect, go fish. For the 99.8% of the rest of this room, everything I'm talking about right now, if you have the audacity to own your own business and live the life that entrepreneurship and owning your own business allows you, and you do not put in the hours over the next half decade to educate yourself, I do not want anybody running out of this talk saying, wait a minute, he's right. I'm gonna let our 23-year-old niece now do her thing. This is not you're outsourcing it to that young buck. And I know that's why some of you laughed. You're like, yeah, Nancy's gonna, no, not Nancy. You, John, you're gonna do it. If you own your business in this room, you need to spend 50 to 100 hours on the internet reading or watching videos or listening. I don't know how you learn, but you need to understand where your end consumer's attention is because you're not gonna be able to reach them. And word of mouth, listen, guys, one more time. Think about this, this is so good. I've actually never said this publicly, it just literally came in my head. You know how we're talking about social norms? You know how you're talking about how upset you are? You know, one of my favorite debates of parents right now is they say that their children don't know how to act social. They've decided, parents in this room have decided that our children, their children, are socially awkward because they only live in the phone. They've decided that the way humans communicate is only defined by looking somebody in the eye and using their mouth. They have been romantic in this room about the platform that one communicates through instead of actually communicating. Every child, 8 to 12 to 17 in America right now, is dramatically more social than you. Because when you were 12 and none of your friends were around and it was 4:30 on a Tuesday, you went outside and threw a ball against the wall. You interacted with a tire wrapped to a tree. So you may not like the way they communicate, but I promise you, they're the most social that we've ever seen. They're just using a device and a platform that we didn't have access to. Some of you begged to have your own phone line in your room so you could be on the phone with your girlfriend for 7 hours watching 90210. Yes, I don't know how social that was, but here's what I know. I know that the thing that you're complaining about is going to hurt your business because as we continue to communicate that way, the way we recommend products and service will continue to happen that way. when 29-year-old Sally, who's 17 or 19 or 21 right now, is only talking to her friends when they first buy their home, or 41-year-old Sally. You know, I want to remind everybody, this is not 2008 anymore. This is not what's coming. This is what's happened. 98% of the Fortune 500 CPG brands in America declined last year because they continue to think the following. Watch this. You really want to get into the macro of all this? How many people here know when they watch television? When you watch your favorite TV shows outside of live sports, now watch them when you want to watch them, not when they air. Netflix, DVR, TiVo, on demand. Raise your hands. Hi. Great, everybody. 90%. How many of you fast forward every single commercial when given the opportunity? Raise your hands. 90%. And even if the brands, my brands, that spend, stick with me here, collectively, tens, I think it's now $80 billion to make 30-second videos and then air them in between shows that you actually want to watch, even if they're lucky enough to have you have a chance to see them because the remote control falls off the bed, even if that miracle happens, every person here, the second their favorite show goes into commercial, grabs this. And this is where the attention is. And that, at a macro, is what I'm worried about you. You are not like Sonic Restaurants or Toyota, my client, and spending it on television. You're spending it on something else. But boy, is my intuition that it's not being spent in the best place that that dollar can be spent. Or, even more scary, because you've been so successful and you were the king or queen of that town, you've gone completely complacent and aren't spending at all because word of mouth is in process, which creates the greatest vulnerability. And I promise you, in 2022 and in 2024, it's not just the kid at the table there who's gonna do it better. It's also going to be the macro discussion of, you think Amazon cares about your feelings? You think Walmart spent $20 billion buying e-commerce sites so you can sell pools and spas? Like, where do you think the world's going? And so if you are not planning on retiring in the next 5 years, then you need to start really understanding what's happening, because I'm just talking about simple social media right now. How many people have an Alexa in their home? Raise your hand. How many people have an Alexa in their home? An Echo. One more time, Alexa Echo. Okay. How many people don't know what that is, actually? It's okay, I just wanna get a sense. Great. Man, that guy in the back there loves retiring, loves not knowing anything. I love that dude. We just gotta find him, yeah. He's old school, huh? I like that dude. All right, anyway. Let me just give you the average day for somebody who needs to have their pool serviced in 2023. Alexa, I want my pool serviced. That's it. And I think it'd be really smart if you understood how social media worked in 2017, so that when you have to understand how Alexa's algorithm works in 2020, that you're the answer to that question, not Amazon itself or somebody else. Guys, the stakes are much higher. Please do me a favor. Please go read what happened during the Industrial Revolution and how many people went out of business out of complacency because they didn't understand that we were living through the biggest technology shift of that era. We are fully in it. We're now in it. And so over the next decade, I want to remind you that 10 years ago, everything we live on now didn't exist. 10 years ago. It's 11 for some of the websites. 10 years ago, no smartphone. 10 years ago. 10 years ago, YouTube's 11, Facebook's 11. If you think a lot's happened in the last 10 years, wait till you see what happens over the next 10 years. The stakes are enormously high. And I'm not here fear-mongering. This is just what's happening. Very honestly, the fact that you're the creme de la creme of I assume that the majority of people in this room are like, yes, this is the opportunity. This is where I transition from a $6 million a year business to a $15 million a year business. This is when I transitioned from a $180,000 a year business to a $2.9 million business. This is pure opportunity. The problem is, and this is where everybody defaults into, they raise their, Gary, I didn't grow up with this. Me neither, Carl. I didn't grow up with this either, Carl. And guess what, Carl? You didn't grow up driving and you figured it out. Understanding the digital landscape and what our consumers are doing on it is now oxygen for businesses. If you do not understand it, you will be destroyed. I lived this, so I gave a keynote. So I was an early investor in Uber. I gave a keynote at the limo and taxi service thing, and when they announced me, they said Uber, and a couple of them booed. Half of them, just like the Alexa thing, didn't even know it existed yet. And I said, my friends, you have to understand what this means. And where I really went with the talk, and this is where I want to go with you to bring you value versus telling you a story, here's my thesis. My thesis is very simple. It is far better to put yourself out of business than to have somebody else do it for you. And what I mean by that is, if you know your vulnerability, whatever you heard here, whatever you know, well then you should start doing that to curtail that vulnerability. And the reason I want you to build a media brand around you is no technology, not Alexa, not Facebook, not anything that gets invented that we don't know exists now, none of that builds or beats brand, because they're not gonna ask Alexa for, let me service my pool or who should I go with. They're gonna say, I wanna go with David, call David and fix my pool. And that's called brand. And there's a very big difference, my friends, between brand and sales. And 90% of people are in the sales business. The direct mail is a call to action, it's a sale. The Facebook stuff that you've been doing, and I did some homework, it's not working because you're selling. You're not even trying to romance a girl. You're going right in. How about making a video that's instructional that can actually help people to know what to do? Now you've provided value. I taught people how to decant. This is very nerdy. My decanting, how to decant wine video, that was the gateway to $1.7 million worth of sales. It was very easy. I watched it. They'd go to YouTube, they'd watch the decanting video, they'd click winelibrary.com, because it was linked below, they'd go to the website, and they'd buy something. When you provide value up front, you win. I've written 4 New York Times best-selling books. The one that has sold the least is called The Thank You Economy. It's the one that matters the most. And the reason it's sold the least is because nobody wants to do the work. When people are done reading it, they put it down and say, screw that. They don't want to provide the upfront value, and all I'm trying to do in my career is provide the upfront value. Basically, my entire thesis of selling, which was the next book I wrote, Jab, 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 Right Hook, is how do I guilt you into buying my stuff? How do I provide you so much value that it would be inconceivable to you to go with somebody else? And that is what I want to challenge everybody here to think about as a thesis. And then what I want to spend the next 55-50 minutes, I want to start Q&A pretty quickly. So let me frame up Q&A. I'll talk a little bit, then we'll get going, and then we'll see how much Q&A. I want to go very detail-oriented. When we go into Q&A, I want to be like, hey, Gary, Sal, I own 2 stores in Minnesota, shops. We tried Facebook, it didn't work. Like, let's go very deep. Like, how do I set this Snapchat worth it? Like, go very, like, to me, this is the opportunity. This is the opportunity that this organization has created for you. This is, I think, you can go watch the first 30 minutes of this on YouTube. What BioGuard did for you is gave me enough time to do the Q&A, so please ask me your direct questions digitally. What do websites still matter? How do you think about this? Let me give you some other things. By the way, day trading attention. My most exciting meeting is with a guy by the name of Bob Pittman tomorrow, who started MTV, who owns iHeartRadio. That's why I asked about the podcast. My belief is that drive time radio is starting to get low enough in cost that it might be a deal again. So I'm not a digitalist, I'm an attentionist. I don't care where your attention is. If tomorrow I woke up and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, and LinkedIn all disappeared, I'd be pumped. Because my contemporaries would be confused and I would be spending every minute figuring out where everybody went. And I would know for the next 24 to 36 months, it would be underpriced, because while people debated if it's gonna stick around or matter, I'd be executing and selling stuff. So that's the punchline. Are we in a position, do you think digitally first? The answer is no for 85, 90% of this audience. Are you, if you are, for the other 15%, are you complacent in the things that got you here, which was you were just like me and you won on Google, and you won on Google AdWords, but now that's changing because that expense is going higher, and that's not branding because that's sales, it's just blue letters. Have you figured out how to make 2-minute and 3-minute videos and put them on Facebook to drive your business? Have you figured out how to get home and lifestyle Instagram accounts, paying them $100 or $200 for a shout out, which then drives conversion for you? Have you figured out the new arbitrages? And inevitably, what are you gonna then go and do about it? Because the opportunity is real. I believe for small businesses in America, you're on the clock. When I gave this talk, a very different version, in 1999, you know whose D-Day it was? It was called bookstores. They didn't know it, but they were done. And then who was on D-Day in 2009, 10, 11? Cab and limo drivers. Do you know how sad it is personally for me? As I told you, I was born in Russia. Some of my dad's friends went to LA and started, you know, drove a cab for 7, 8, 10 years, then eventually saved up all their money and bought a couple of cars and built their business, got to that age of 55, 56, had something of a business that was worth something, they were about to sell it off, and in 24 months, Uber destroyed the value of their business by 90%. One of my dad's friends was gonna sell his business for $3.7 million, decided not to for another year or two, and sold it for $370,000. That's just real. So as we sit here today, I promise you the Marriott and the Hilton weren't sitting around 4 years ago and saying, what are our threats in the future? I promise you nobody raised their hand in that room and said, hey, wait a minute, what if somebody invents a website that is like the eBay of people's actual homes, and instead of staying in hotels, we would stay in each other's homes? How many people here have used an Airbnb or are on Airbnb? Raise your hands. Raise them high, I want people to look. How many people here don't know what Airbnb is? I expect some, please raise your hands, it's okay. So Airbnb, it's okay, don't worry. Airbnb stands for Air Bed and Breakfast. It is a website where people list their homes and apartments when they're not there, and other people stay in people's homes. That's what's hurting the hotel industry. And so you sit here today, and I just want you to do good content on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, because that's where the attention is. And I'm worried if there's some kid if Sally right now is about to invent something that's gonna really hurt you. And so that's why this is what I call almost like digital fitness. There's no way to run a marathon if you haven't been on the treadmill preparing for it. The most important thing for me, for you to do Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and videos and content and podcasts, the most important thing for me is that it's getting you into the mindset of that world in case you really need it in 3 or 4 years. Right now, I'm sitting here and talking to you about the differences of you growing your business next year 4% versus growing it 18%. I don't wanna come back here in 4 years and talk about the difference between you selling your business for 3.7 million or 370,000. Thank you. That's what my dad did. You know, I didn't see him. We had nothing. Like, I had one toy for 7 years because every dollar was saved so that he could then buy a small liquor store in New Jersey to make our American dream, and that's what he did. I was a very entrepreneurial kid. By the time we moved to Edison, New Jersey, where he became a manager of a liquor store, I was 6 and I was already selling. My first business transaction was I got the great idea at 5, 6 years old to go around the neighborhood, go into people's yards, rip their flowers out of their yard, go to their door, ring their doorbell, and sell it back to them. Amazing business model, by the way. So that was me. That gives you a little insight to how I was wired. I'll tell you later how my dad saved me from being a bullshit artist. The reality is this. The reason I'm bringing up the origin story is something very weird happened. I only remembered this a couple years ago. If you've seen this talk on YouTube in 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, I don't talk about this part. And then a friend told me something and it triggered a memory. When I was 7 years old, I had all my friends in the neighborhood convinced to stand behind lemonade stands, and I had 7, 6, or 5 lemonade stands going every summer day. It's interesting what I did though, and it's gonna be very important to where I'm going. I didn't stand behind a lemonade stand, not because I was fancy and thought I was the big boss, it's because I would walk up and down the streets of my neighborhood, sit down, literally sit down on the grass, and think about this, I'm now 7 years old. As a 7 year old, I thought it was interesting to sit on the grass and for 3-4 hours at a time, watch cars drive by to try to figure out which tree or which pole to put my lemonade stand sign on. And so somewhere 2 or 3 years ago, I go, my God, it wasn't that I was taught intuitively, I've been chasing attention my whole life. I am fascinated by where attention is today. We have never, ever seen more disruption to the end consumer's attention than we're seeing right now. What 50% of the global consumer's attention means on this device as a platform, you have no opportunity of succeeding going forward. And all of a sudden, the Facebooks and the WeChats and the LinkedIns and the YouTubes become a hell of a lot more serious. And so for me, what I really want to figure out in this room is the following. Number one, do we have a healthy debate in this audience about the thing that has really popped top of mind to me in the last 3 to 4 years, which is the following. There is a substantial difference between selling and branding. And yet, over the last 6 years, I've become unbelievably aware that the biggest companies in the world mix the two all the time. And I believe, you know, it's funny, I say a lot of things because the way I speak is improv, and I kind of adjust to you. When I just said that, it was interesting to see how many people's heads reacted to that. And it's a stunningly big debate, because as we become more digital in our society, the math becomes more obvious. And I've been fascinated as somebody who used quant and math in the early mid 90s to build a business, that we've become religious about math to a fault in our environment and aren't having the proper debate of what the variable of success is. Or we're not compartmentalizing it and letting math be math over here from a sales transaction standpoint, but then allocating the right dollars to art and creative as a variable to drive our businesses. And what happens when you actually build a brand, how it affects the math and drives down those costs and things of that nature. So I think we are, I'll say it very, very, very black and white. I think this room, we are, depending on how your DNA is structured and how you see the world, we are either the luckiest or the least lucky marketers and operators ever, because the stakes are enormously high. The stakes are so, so high because the biggest companies in the world will change spots over the next 10 years because of how much attention is actually in this device. We are stunningly underestimating the speed in which the transactions are going to occur on different places and how and why and who has the leverage and why. Let me explain. In 1996, I launched winelibrary.com. It was one of the first 3 to 5 e-commerce wine businesses. My dad had a liquor store doing $3.7 million in revenue on 10% gross profit. So we had no money. You know, the internet, you know, how many people here had email in 1997? Raise your hand. Perfect, great. So a lot of you remember, in 1997, for some of the youngsters in this room, the way we read email was, we read every fucking email. The marketing that my dad had done and the little marketing that I started doing was more direct mail, was newspaper advertising, and it was fascinating to me to see email. I remember why I took email so serious in 1996. I thought by the year 2000, they would charge us to send email because it was such a good deal. Like I just couldn't wrap my head. Remember, like I couldn't wrap my head around how is this free? I was competing against liquor stores that were sending catalogs in the mail. I would get a Chateau Lafite and send it to them that day. The catalog would come a month later. It cost them $3 to print it and $1 to ship. Spending so much money on programmatic banner garbage that looks good on math from a media buying agency standpoint, but is doing nothing for our businesses, that I don't wanna be the digital guy, I wanna be the what's the attention worth guy.
And so for me, it's interesting because I'm always looking for an arbitrage. I just did everything right for 5 years in hindsight, and it was to make every penny worth a dollar. And that's when you trade attention. That's when you're trying to underbuy attention and not overspend on attention. On Google for 3 days before I realize Google AdWords comes out, it's 3 days old, excuse me. I start running ads. I owned every wine term in America for 5 cents a click. This was before they made a 10 cents minimum. I mean, the word wine, let alone the word Bordeaux or Chateau Lafite or what have you. I owned the word wine for 9 months before anybody bid me up. And as you guys can all imagine, the ROI was remarkable. And this is when I had my second regret. How many people here play poker? Raise your hands. Great. I don't, but I do understand the following. When you have the best hand, and you know you have the best hand, it's probably a good idea in certain circumstances to go all in. I had the best hand with Google AdWords, but I didn't go all in. My business was growing. I went from 3 to 15 million like that, right? I had the dollars to spend, but I was still mixing my media. I was still doing outdoor. I was doing local radio. I was doing direct mail. I'm an operator. I run my businesses. I'm here to buy under, for example, right now I'm looking at outdoor media in America very aggressively because prices are collapsing. So I don't love it. I think every single passenger looks at their phone, so I don't think it's as good of a deal as it was 15 years ago from eyeballs, but if the price gets low enough, I could be convinced. And so for me, that's the thing that is never being talked about. Everybody's drawing lines in the sand in our marketing lab. It's I'm digital, I'm traditional, right? There's all these bots and this is all bullshit and on digital, or you know, nobody watches a television commercial. We have these lines in the sand and we don't have complicated depth, much more thoughtful conversations of what's happening. And then we don't layer at all branding versus sales in those two environments. And I think these are things that I think a lot about. My career took a super interesting turn in 2006. So I'm trucking along with email and Google, right? And I'm doing my thing, business is getting really big. As you can imagine, for an immigrant family, we made it, right? I bought my car at a garage sale. My brother AJ, who's 11 years younger, got a brand new Lexus. I'm a little bitter, but you know, it is what it is. So I'm trucking along, things are going good, and then I come across a website, it's 3 months old at the time, and it's called YouTube. And at this point, YouTube, for any of you that saw YouTube in the first 6 months, it was a very interesting site. YouTube, really YouTube's first seed was a dating site, which really gets referenced nowhere outside of their Wikipedia if you look it up, it's pretty interesting. But then very quickly, as you may remember, it was all copyrighted material, right? It was all Saturday Night Live and Jimmy Fallon. And I looked at it and I said, huh, this is interesting. I really, again, intuition, I was like, this is gonna be something. So I started playing, and a couple months later, I launched a video blog called Wine Library TV. My family business is called Wine Library. And it was the first time that content had entered my life. Up until this point, I was a retailer, operator, and advertiser and marketer. This was the first time that content, something that I didn't have to spend any money on distribution, entered my life. My concept with Wine Library TV was simple. I sat in front of my table, in front of a camera, with 3 to 4 bottles of wine, and I drank them for 20 minutes. Best gig I ever had, and it worked. And it worked for a couple of reasons. Number one, it worked because YouTube was right and it was gonna go on to become big. Number two, I thought I was gonna do QVC and Home Shopping Network. I thought it was gonna sell, but as soon as that red light that I see right now came on, I realized, oh shit, this is forever recorded. And if you come to me at a party and say, what do you think about this glass of wine? If I say it's gibberish, but on my show, I said it was great because I wanted to move it, everything would die. So literally, it's funny, I did 1,000 episodes of this show. If I go back to episode one, somewhere around 3 minutes, because you know how you know yourself, I can see in my face, I'm like, oh shit, I better actually review these the way they have to be reviewed. And so I realized very quickly, I needed to become America's wine guy, not the salesman for my store, which led to a very intriguing era for me where I was panning wines of good suppliers and caused a lot of politics. But this is not why I'm telling you this story. I'm telling you this story because the impact on our business was extraordinary. And it was more ROI positive than any advertising that I was doing. And it's led me to a thesis that I want to leave with, and this is going to be one of the tidbits I don't know if you write things down, I'm setting it up so you remember it. If you asked me, if we were having dinner and you asked me, what's the number one thing my hospitality group can do? It would be the following, and this is the first time I tasted it in 2006, and I'll give you more of how this has evolved over the last 10 years. I genuinely believe, even if you are in this auditorium right now and you're a B2B SaaS provider for hospitality groups, I believe the statement I'm about to say, which is the following. Going into the next decade, I believe everybody's company in here is a media company first, comma, what they ever do for a living. I believe that if you can wrap your head, and listen, this is not a small thing. The thought that every single person here needs to bring in an editor-in-chief, a producer, a head of content, a chief content officer, is not common talk. And I don't mean a marketer, I mean somebody that works at the Wall Street Journal or the BBC or Sports Illustrated. Somebody who is in the media business gets injected and now you become a lifestyle magazine. Now you become a weekly TV show on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, that the number one arbitrage of the next decade, like I believe every single person's company in this room should have a weekly or bi-weekly podcast that is targeted to the audience that they're trying to affect. Leveled up to not be a sales pitch, but to be what Wine Library TV was for me, which is I just tried to provide value. Of course there was trickle down economics to what I was doing, but I never wavered in church and state, which is imperatively difficult for every company in here. And that is a bet that most people won't take because you have to spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars upfront with no clear cut ROI in the first 12, 24, or 36 months. That was the first time I felt that. And then basically at that point in my career, I decided that I was right about email and e-commerce and YouTube and Google AdWords and that I was being stupid, that making more money selling a couple more cases of Shouting Up the Pop was probably not the right strategy with this intuition. I promised myself the next time I felt it, that feeling, I would become an investor. Because Google bought YouTube, I read an article about angel investing, and I was like, what is this? And that changed the course of my career and probably brought me here today. In 2007, I saw three of those companies. They were Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. Those were the first three investments I made. As you can imagine, that changed the course of my life. And then in 2009, I really took an interesting turn, and it's where all of us connect, which is I started a company called VaynerMedia with my brother AJ. I decided that I wanted to build a private equity operating firm, but the way I was gonna do that was I was gonna spend 10 years in the agency business learning every industry and figuring out why they were spending the money the way they did and build a very large firm and take it from there. And that's what I'm doing now. Over the last 5 to 6 years, I've actively been the CEO of an 800 person agency, New York, LA, London, big brands, Pepsi, Unilever, Choice Hotels, you know, things of that nature. So I've learned a lot. It's been very interesting to me. And the biggest takeaway for me is very simple. We are just not marketing in the year that we live in. And more importantly, we're not marketing in the day that we live in.